Tikkun Olam is a term in Judaism that means improving life, improving humanity, and making the world a better place. If we look at what's happening around the world, we can see that, you know, Tikkun Olam that started from, I would say, an internal Jewish world concept emerged into an amazing effort of the Jewish people around the globe to make the world a better place. You can see it in environmental issues, humanitarian issues, and even in the political sphere, where you see a lot of Jews involved in political acts, trying to make a change. But when we're talking about Tikkun Olam, you actually see things also on the ground. And when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about hands-on solutions for people with disabilities, helping people, you know, in poor places, and that type of thing. One of the leading organizations that is doing that is actually called Tikkun Olam Makers. Originally from Israel, now they work in more than 80 countries around the States. But I'm going to be talking to Roy Goldenberg, their Israel director, about what's happening in Israel, what they do in Israel, and also how they literally make an impact through Tikkun Olam. So let's hear what Roy has to say. And by the way, I'm going to leave the link to Tikkun Olam Makers in the episode description. So feel free to check them out, see what they do. They are looking for volunteers, by the way, around the world, because there are a lot of the work is with volunteers and not just with associates. So if you're looking to volunteer and make the world a better place, I believe that Tikkun Olam Makers or TOM Global, that's the place for you. Let's hear Roy now. Welcome back to Balagan. I'm sitting in Tel Aviv now in TOM Innovation Center, and I'm glad to introduce Roy Goldenberg, the Israel director of TOM, Tikkun Olam Makers. Hey, how are you doing, Roy?
Good, Kobi. Good to be here. Thank you for inviting me for your podcast.
So, Roy, before we jump to what you guys are doing and how it's connected to the war with Hamas, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Roy, and eventually, how did you get to what you're doing in your day job?
All right. So my name is Roy Goldenberg. I'm 31 years old. I'm a social tech entrepreneur, and I've been working with TOM for the last 6 years. And my background is in polymer engineering. I grew up here in Israel, in the Galil, and I've been living in Jaffa for the last 8 years. Besides TOM, I founded a nonprofit called Waveability that helps people with disabilities to access the beach and surfing. And I'm also part of a few other nonprofits in the world of peace promoting and also, again, disability and accessibility of the society here in Israel. I'm coming from one background, shifted to another field of work. But I'm trying to bring technology and with society together to create a better world.
Sounds awesome. So tell us a little bit about TOM and how does it work, you know, as we say in Hebrew, lifrot liprutot.
So I've heard about TOM about 6 years ago when I was still a student. I was looking for an opportunity to use my skills and my passion to support my community. And I fell in love with the idea of, you know, using my tech skills or my engineering kind of expertise and use them to help people in my community, in my surrounding. I founded the community in Shenkar College, where I was studying. And since it was really like a romance. I was volunteering with TOM for almost a year until they recruited me for their team. And since I've been working with them, and it's been a long journey, a bumpy road, but I'm very happy with where we are as an organization, also with what I get to do every day, and the reason that I have to wake up every morning. So it's been a really lovely journey.
So when you're talking about communities and what you did as a student in Shenkar, and if we're looking at the name, because TOM stands for Tikkun Olam Makers, Tikkun Olam comes from the Jewish term of Tikkun Olam.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about that. What's the difference between, you know, the term Tikkun Olam and actually how you guys are doing it on the grounds as Tikkun Olam makers?
I think, you know, Tikkun Olam has been for a few decades or even centuries a term that was used by Judaism and was talking more on the maybe spiritual or intellectual level of humanity and how we are, as the Jewish community, the global Jewish community, providing with new values and new kind of more spiritual contribution to the global society. And I think nowadays with, you know, when our world is much more connected and, you know, we have the ability to touch so many people at once with the new technology and the hyper-connected society, the term Tikkun Olam is kind of shifting into be something that is more quantitative, something that we can actually act and do, and not just you know, provide with knowledge and let's say spiritual. Maybe lacking the word here, but
more I would say down to earth solutions.
Exactly.
I would say,
exactly. So I think, you know, it's a very good description of what we do, and also I think Tikkun Olam makers and the acronym TOM all together made a very cool and also a descriptive name for, you know, exactly what we're doing. So
I want to ask you, you know, talking about Judaism and the Jewish world, there is a big difference between Tikkun Olam, the way that the Orthodox are doing it, and the way that, of course, the Reform are doing it. And it seems to me that your, I would say, work scope looks a lot more like the Reform Tikkun Olam, because you're not just aiming for the Jewish people. You are working not just within Israel, and also in Israel, you're not just working uniquely with the Jewish society. Is that correct?
It is correct. And we as a humanitarian organization, we offer our support to any person, regardless of their religion or ethnicity or race. But I think, you know, we're also, for us, it's very important to remain, let's say, loyal to our identity as an Israeli-born organization, and also an organization that is spreading through the Jewish communities. And I do believe that this our work is, at the end of the day, also beneficial to the Jewish, to the global Jewish community by this kind of identity of our organization.
So when we're talking on the legal scope, how does it look like, you know, your work with minorities in Israel? And also, I've heard that you're working with people in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So people as people know, it's either the Palestinian Authority or beyond the 67 border, the Green Line.
Yeah.
How does that work? I mean, because everybody knows that we're not friends with the Palestinians, so...
So I think, you know, it depends who is we, and
I agree. It was the royal we.
Yeah, who is we and who is them? I can say definitely I have Palestinian friends as a, you know, me personally, but again, as I said earlier, like, we're a humanitarian organization, we're obligated to help any person with disability or the elderly that can benefit from our work. I really think and also saw how our work is able to cross lines of political agendas and perspectives, and also like physical lines, like borders, because once you recruit people for a mutual challenge or a mutual goal that is not on the political aspect, and it really brings people together. And I think I had this first, I wouldn't say call it epiphany, but the first time I got this insight was when we did a project for Noam, who is a wounded vet, together with Noam lost his hand in a grenade explosion. And we did this project together with a kid named Muhammad, who was transferred from Gaza Strip to Israel for medical treatments. And they did this project together, Noam and Muhammad. And nobody cared about where Muhammad came from or the fact that Noam was injured in the military. And it was just amazing to see it. And, you know, that's 4 years ago, and made a long way since then. And today we have teams of Israeli Arabs, Palestinians, and Jews working together on projects of people, whether from Umm al-Fahim, which is within the 67 lines, let's put it this way, or people from Hebron or Nablus that are coming here, and also Jews, you know, people with disability from all places, and makers from all places working together to create solutions. Politics and or the debates on which land, piece of land belongs to who is just not part of the discussion. And yeah, it's amazing to see, because as I said, I'm also active with other organizations that are more in the peacemaking world. And it's very different crowd, I would say, because on those organizations, you have the what we call the immediate suspects. You know, you have the peace activists, the more open-minded, the more maybe progressive people that come together and then they debate. But I always feel that those, you know, we or like those people, we don't represent the majority of the society. And I think what we get to do as Tom is to work with the majority of the society who are neither peace activists or, you know, extremely nationalist, I would call it this way. So it's really this like 80% that is in between. And those are the people that we're bringing together. And I think, you know, there's a lot of impact that we can create on those 80%.
And just like, you know, you brought up the perfect example of Noam and Muhammad. Mm-hmm. Eventually it shows that the people with disability, they share the same disability, nationality, religious, gender, doesn't really matter. I mean, they have the same challenge and they need, you know, the solution to work things out.
Yeah, the prosthetic arm doesn't care if it's been worn by a Muslim or a Jew or, you know, a Palestinian or an Israeli Arab. It's the same prosthetic and it will create the same impact on the person. And the makers or the volunteers that are doing these projects with us, they understand this very quickly. You know, you can help anyone no matter where they come from.
So tell me a little bit about the work model, because your work is based on a really, I would say, narrow staff, but a huge network of partners, right? Is that correct to say it this way?
Yes. So I think, you know, before we started the podcast, you asked me about the name of this place. Why is it Tom Innovation Center? And we were really debating on whether it's that we should call it a technological center or innovation. And we went with the innovation because at the end of the day, Tom is being innovative mostly on the mobility of society, how we're mobilizing society in order to create a larger impact. And I think that our ability to created such an impact all across the country and, you know, Israel, West Bank, and also globally in almost 30 other countries is by thinking creatively on how to engage people and how to also engage existing resources that are just not being directed to sometimes the right places. And so, yeah, the word innovation for Tom is not just, you know, how we're doing, you know, I'm a techie person. Yeah. So I like to think that we're very innovative on the tech side as well, which we are, but it's also on the mobility of society.
It's eventually a lot of brainstorming and you need a lot of good people.
Yeah.
How do you get to those people?
So I can share with my own, as I said, I was 1 year volunteering with Tom, and I can share from my own personal perspective or experience. When I was a student for polymer engineering in Chicago, I felt that I'm doing a lot of projects myself, and my other students were doing so many projects to be able to graduate from our schooling. And all those projects just goes to nothing. You know, they fade out, disappears at the end of our school program.
And you just get the grade and that's it.
Yeah, you get the grade, you show a nice presentation, you save it on a floppy disk, not a floppy disk, not at all, but yeah, like on a you know, a disk compete. And if you created maybe a 3D object, you know, at best it will get to your mom's shelf and she will show it to all her friends and be proud how amazing her son is. You know, that's the peak of your project. And I felt like I remember like leaving all the design school in Shankar. They had this like a presentation day. At the same time, there was a renovation of because a lot of the ceramic plates of the building were falling. So they had to put like this big net and also this big public trash bins, you know, like the big metal ones outside the college. And I remember leaving that day college and just looking at the bin and seeing all the objects and projects of the design students just laying there. And I remember just passing by and saying, wow, how many hours are there right now inside this bin? And I think that was part of my kind of understanding of how I can take all those hours and just shift them to somewhere else where instead of reaching to this bin, or as I said, at best to your mom's shelf, how it can really reach someone in the community and really change his life or their life. I think from this point, I really understood how you can incentivize people to donate their time, which they spend anyway in many cases, and just to give them the right tools and guidance and connections and make sure that this time is being translated to something that is actually impactful. So that was kind of with the students, and we can go to any, we have a lot of people coming here from high school students to university students, people at their like 30s, 40s, and also people at the pension that are coming here. Every single identity of an individual has a way to incentivize them to do this kind of work. And it's very important. We always keep asking ourselves, what is it for every person that they would like to come here? And it's very important for us to also provide it to this kind of people.
And you also work with a lot of other places outside of Tun. I mean, from what I know, from what I learned from being here, you work with the Seminar Kibbutzim, the Kibbutzim Seminar, for example, on a solution for people with sleeping disorders, right? And then anxiety. Mm-hmm. What is that solution, for example?
So we're now, after the October 7th, we realized that we have already as an organization a lot of resources that we can mobilize to support the community and the society here in Israel and in the new reality that we're experiencing. The first thing we did was we were bringing together a lot of our, let's call it partners, and to ask them, you know, what do they need? So we had a very big Zoom meeting with a few dozens of people. A lot of them were occupational therapists, physiotherapists, people coming from rehabilitation centers, nonprofits. And we started asking them, you know, what would help you right now? What kind of solutions we can provide? And one of the occupational therapists, she said that she sees a lot of people with anxiety that are struggling to fall asleep. And she said, it would be great if we would have the solution that you know, that's called weighted blankets. But her problem is that, one, it's very expensive for most people to purchase. Second, there's not enough awareness to this solution. And third, if she needs so much right now that there's no way for her to get so many because they don't exist in Israel. You need to ship it globally from different places and etc. So we immediately saw the potential and started working with our partners in Seminar Kibbutzim College because they have a lot of sewing machines. We created a very quick product file, meaning kind of like the blueprints or the production assembly guide for this weighted blankets. And we've been producing for the last 3 weeks. Every day we have volunteers working on sewing those blankets. Glad to share that on Sunday, we're going to provide blankets to the survivors of the Nova Festival, who are now staying in a place here in Israel together, and they get all their, you know, so the psychology services and the mental support that they definitely need right now. So we're happy that we can also provide this kind of support for them, and hopefully they can sleep a little bit better at night. But so far we got from a lot of people with PTSD, kids on the autistic spectrum, that we provided them with the blankets. We got very positive feedbacks, and it's amazing. And I think our volunteers are very happy to get daily all those feedbacks from people.
That's awesome. And some of the solutions are just ad hoc in a way, I can say. I mean, I just heard that yesterday you did the whole way to Elat, right? For Americans, it's not just such a long way. It's about 150 miles, even less. But in Israel, it's considered to be like a day trip.
Well, it was, I made it into a day trip. You know, I said, you know, I'm not going to just drive back and forth. I took my my partner with me and we did it into the weekend. But we drove the whole way. There was, we're working with an organization in Israel that's called Access Israel. And they are the ones that are taking care of all the people with disabilities that were displaced or evacuated from the Gaza envelope and from the northern border. And now they are being placed in hotels across the country, so Eilat, Tel Aviv, and other places. And the challenge that they have is that even if, you know, some hotels have accessible rooms for people with disabilities, that usually what it is accessible for is people with wheelchairs. So it means that the door is a bit wider. And there's an elevator, and
the shower is wider also.
And the shower is supposedly wider, but that's about it. So, you know, disability is maybe the widest spectrum of needs that exist. And I helped two of those families. One in Eilat, as you said, he's a wounded vet from 1969. He's smashed both of his legs from a bombing in the Sinai Peninsula back in 69. And he's been challenging to use the toilets and the shower because there were no railing that he can use to sit down, stand up. And also there was nothing inside the shower that he can sit on. And for him, sitting on a plastic chair was in a shower was too scary because he was afraid to slip. And so that was his challenge. Very quickly, we did here with my team, we did like a brainstorming and some market research. The second problem was that the hotel didn't allow us to drill through the walls. They didn't want to drill through the beautiful ceramics of the hotel. So we found some solution that exists on the market that sticks to the wall without drilling through it for the railing. And also we built a custom-made kind of bench for this person that he can sit exactly by the size of the shower, drove all the way there to give it to him and to his wife. And they were very, very happy. You know, I think both about the solutions that really, you know, changed their day to day, and also about the attention that they get from people, that people really care about their, not just about to keep them safe, but also to keep their well-being. So that was one. And the second, we did now in Tel Aviv with a mother to a kid with a cerebral palsy. And she was, you know, back home. They have a solution for her to use the toilets. Unfortunately, the home didn't stay. So they don't, nothing left in their home. So we created a solution for them for kind of like a add-on to the toilets that she can use now with a strap and cushioning. So it will hold her straight, also for the shower. And it's also folded, they can fold it. So they were very happy because they love going off-roading with their they have a nice SUV and they're all about it. And this can fold into the SUV and they can travel with it. So we created for them this solution. And again, they were very, very happy. And we're hoping now to launch this activity with Access Israel and to spread it around the country.
You mentioned the displaced, and you know we are at war. We have more than 300,000 people who were evacuated from the homes in Israel.
Right.
But I want to ask you about Tom. How did the war change your work scope or the way you operate?
I think what we're doing right now is quite similar to what we used to do before the war. One thing is that we're just doing it much more vigorously and like, you know, we're working long hours. We have more volunteers. I think, you know, everybody speaks about, you know, the kind of engagement of the Israeli society to like to volunteer and to help nonprofits and to help, you know, people right now. And it really is amazing. You know, like we have hundreds of volunteers working with us right now. This is not usually, you know, we have, let's say, about 100 volunteers at any given moment. And now it's just like growing and growing the numbers. So we have more volunteers, we have more work, but we also shifted because we usually do more, we put our focus more on developing new solutions and expanding our portfolio of solutions. And now we're shifting more into the manufacturing and distribution of solutions that we already have, and also creating very quick development processes so we can expand the portfolio for needs that are more related to the war and the displacement of the people in Israel and the wounded soldiers or wounded citizens that are starting now to arrive to the rehabilitation centers. So we're also working close with the rehabilitation centers to build manufacturing points inside the rehabilitation center so they can provide with our solutions ad hoc and very quickly.
Amazing. So I want to ask you, you know, we're about to wrap up, but I want to ask you about, you know, the collaborations. Because we did speak about Israeli Arabs and, you know, with the Palestinians. Was there any change in your collaborations because of the war? Do you experience any change in that term? Or because of what you're doing, it doesn't matter?
I think it's still a bit early to say what will be, how, what's going to be the trend after, during this war and after this war. But there's definitely, everybody understands, definitely going to be a trend in, you know, the relationships between Palestinians and Israelis, Israeli Jews and Israeli Arabs. There's going to be a lot of changes in this field, and it's still early to say. The only thing I would say is that we're continuing to do our work in Ramallah, in the West Bank, with our Arab partners, and it's actually even, you know, accelerating since the war. We're, as we speak, we're building a makerspace in Ramallah and to host our activities there with our community leader in Ramallah. We have an activity in Arara, which is an Arab village near Umm al-Fahem, so within the 67 lines. So we're having this activity and it's ongoing and going great. We just met them last weekend and they said, we want more. We want to do more activities with you, more programs. So I don't feel like our kind of activities have a negative impact, but more the contrary.
And if to say, I really hope that actually you will be one of the change agents, I would say, the relations between Israelis and Palestinians and, you know, and Jews and Arabs, because what you guys are doing, it doesn't look at, you know, religious or ethnicity. It just looks at the needs of the human being.
Yeah. And I feel, as I said, you know, we have, I think on both societies, there are the few percentages that are radicals and are trying to prevent from any peace agreement to happen. And I think that Tom's work is to make sure that this percentage is getting smaller and smaller. And the people who are not involved, not engaged with any peace conversations, will get a bit more involved into this. And we'll learn about Israelis or learn about Palestinians, you know, to see that, you know, at the end of the day, people just want to live their life. They want to improve people's life in their own community. And yeah, we have very similar values.
So I would say that that's an empowering message. I wish you guys good luck in what you're doing. Hopefully there will not be a need to your work. I will say that. I wish it would happen one day, yeah. But I doubt.
I hope so too. And then I'll have to find a new job. But yeah, I'll be happy to find a new job for that reason.
Yeah, but until then, continue doing what you're doing and make the world a better place.
Thank you so much.
And let's pray for better days in Israel.
Bezrat Hashem, inshallah.
Thank you.
Thank you.